Good morning, Steve Askin.
Good morning. Hey, listen, remember when I went to your house, I didn't even know how to go upstairs. I saw a door. I didn't even know where it led to. It turned out that was the door to go upstairs. it's a house that's got a few years on it. You know, it's a phenomenal house. But, it's not what you call a modern house. So, no. But I saw the kitchen. I saw what you were going to do. And I'd be very curious to see how it looks when it's all finished. I'm sure it's going to look stunning.
I'm sure Tina also appreciates that I'll be gone for the first 10 days of the work, because I think they're starting next Monday, and I leave on Saturday. So she's the one that's going to have to deal with the dust and any issues. So she'll
I would imagine she's still mad at you for allowing me to go upstairs.
Well, I told her. I said, "Oh, Steve, Steve's going to want to see where I do the show. He's going to want to see where the magic happens."
I would have gone up myself if you didn't go up with me.
There you go. Exactly.
You know, but it's like all of them. You know, it's a mess up there. You can't go up there.
Exactly.
And I go up there. I said, "Mess? You call this a mess?
You should see our house, right?
Come to my house. I'll show you a mess."
We've got 14 puzzles, Steve.
I have to say two things before we get started.
Yes.
First, I want to send out a hearty congratulations to Avi and Rhoda on the birth of their granddaughter.
Oh, lovely. Mazel.
Yes, or in other words, Theo's future bride.
Exactly.
We'll have to do that. So that's great news. So, they have two grandsons, now they have a granddaughter, and I'm sure they're absolutely thrilled. And the second thing is, I have to ask you a question the world is dying to know. Nobody's asked it, so I'm going to have to ask it. Who did you pick in the wagering guide?
Who did I pick? I forgot. I didn't send it. Usually I send you. I forgot to send it to you last night. I struggled.
I know. I haven't seen it. Normally you send it to me.
It'll come out tomorrow. You'll be.
Oh, okay. All right.
No, I'm not. No, I won't.
You want me to be surprised? Always.
No. I'm not going to have to be surprised. I actually ended up doing what I kind of thought I was going to do, and I picked as the top horse. I think anybody, when they look at the wagering strategy, you'll see that. Even though I picked Vino Rosso on top.
Welcome to the club.
Well, exactly, and I knew that's right, because I mentioned how you would, and we discussed it a little last week. I'll say this. Upon, doing some of the pen to paper work on short, you didn't have a lot of time, actually, even though we kind of knew who was going to be in the race. I wanted to see figures. I wanted to.
It's tough handicapping now. It really
is. It's ridiculous. Plus, let's get them. Let's get them in the gate and all that, and see how they line up. But I'll say this: I think there's three very strong win candidates, and I picked them in this order: Vino Rosso, Yoshida, and McKenzie.
I'll go with that. I just wrote a whole column on McKenzie. The weird thing is that I had ranked him, I think at one point I had ranked him like second or third, and then my last rankings I ranked him fourth, and I said, and I keep reading about, all the different polls, and nobody likes McKenzie because he's a question in a mile and a quarter, and he got beaten his last start, and I started thinking about it, and then, he worked out the other day, and I watched a workout. And I don't go by times. These are all seasoned, professional, grade one horses. They're all going to work well. But I noticed something about his last workout. And I always like to look at small things in workouts that catch my eye. And the one thing I noticed about his last workout was coming to the quarter pole, turning into the stretch, and galloping out. I cannot remember a horse that close to the rail, which is the one thing I love looking for in workouts. Most horses, in order to keep their momentum and to keep their balance, they'll naturally fan 3-4 wide off the rail. He was like 2 inches off the rail, which to me suggests a horse that's extremely athletic, got tremendous balance, loves that racetrack. And Rafael Bayrano was on him. And I like the fact that he really started asking him coming to the wire and had him, you know, go out a real strong final quarter of a mile. And I think one of the reasons why, I know Baffert loves to do that, but this one he really asked him. And the reason I like that is that I like to see a horse learn how to run through the wire, as the expression goes, which is something he did not do in the Awesome Again. Mike Smith hit him one time. He threw his tail up in the air, and that was it. And he let Mongolian Groom pull away from him. And then if you watch the gallop out, Mongolian Groom's got 15 lengths in front of him going into the gallop out in the turn. So I'm saying, you know, I think this horse needs a little bit of a wake-up call. Plus the fact that I watched the interview. I went on YouTube, and I watched Mike Smith's interview afterwards. And Mike Smith was quoted as saying he was blowing after the race, but this is going to set him up absolutely perfectly for the Classic. He says, you know, this is a horse you don't want to peak, have him peak too soon. And this is perfect. Now, of course, Mike obviously was planning on riding him. But when he said that he was blowing, and I said, you know what? I mean, he hadn't run in 2 months. Track was playing on the dead side. I said, I'm gonna give him this race. You know, and Mongolian Groom came home at 12-1 in that race. You know, it's not like he got beat by Slouch. He's a horse that placed in, you know, Pacific Classic and Big Cap. Maybe he's not a bad horse. And he was allowed to control the pace. He stole the race. And I know Baffert wanted him right up on the pace. With Rosario up now, I definitely see this horse on the lead. Or if not on the lead, if Mongolian Groom wants to bust out of there again, he's going to be at his throat latch. He's not going to let him go anywhere near. This horse will be right there at the finish. And then I started saying, all right, when people saying he can't go, you know, he's not going to go a mile and a quarter. So you know what? So I looked at the 1 mile and a quarter race. Forget the Breeders' Cup last year. He obviously, that wasn't him. I mean, he just didn't run. You look at the Big Cap. He said, all right, well, he got beat by Gift Box. You watch that race, and if you look at the fractions of that race on that day, the Santa Oaks and the Santa Derby that on that same card, their fractions were 47-4 and 112-2, and then 47-4 and 112-1. In the Big Cap, they went 49-1 and 113-3, and he lost. He dropped 3 lengths behind Gift Box. He was right up there, right behind him, sitting in a perfect spot, and Mike let him get back. And, you know, Draft Pick came up on the inside, but some other horse came up on the inside, and he dropped back to fourth. And then he found himself 3 lengths back. And in that, then he asked him to move, and he wound up coming home in 24-1 and 24-2. On that racetrack, I don't care. That's legit. If you can come home at 24-1, 24-2, going a mile and a quarter, you can win at a mile and a quarter. So I'm starting to think that I don't know if I buy it that this horse can't go a mile and a quarter. And I think he's going to control the pace. You know, whether he controls it on the lead or controls it by sitting right off a horse. And I spoke to a lot of people at San Anita, you know, bettors and people who were there all the time. They said you got to be really close to the pace. You know, and that's why I kept, you know, and I don't like that because, you know, I love Code of Honor and I love Yoshida. I don't want to be horses like that to be at a disadvantage. But as of now, and I would imagine, hopefully they'll change the track, but as of now, you've got to be, you know, close up. So that's why I'm looking at McKenzie as a definite play. You know, I'm not saying to win because he's going to be favored. He's to me, he still has the potential to be an overlay, you know, if they bet him down to legitimate favoritism. But I'm still going to stick with Vino Rosso to get a better price. And the thing I like about Vino Rosso is that his best of the thoroughbred figure in his career was the San Diego Gold Cup. And he ran a negative 2.5 in that race, and you know he ran well after that. So I mean he's run three straight negative numbers. So, but his best race was at San Anita. So I still consider him a very strong horse in here. But I agree with you about McKenzie being in the money. You can't throw him out of the money.
No, I don't know why anybody. And I completely agree about the mile and a quarter storyline. Just go back and watch the big cap. I mean, come on. What would people say?
That's what I'm telling people to do. Go back and watch that race. You tell me. I know we didn't get by Gift Box, who's a very good horse. But watch Mike Smith dropping three lengths back of him. And with that pace, how much slower they ran in that race than they did in the San Diego Derby and the San Diego Oaks. And he's got to make up those three lengths, and he comes home that fast. You come home 48-3 in the last half a mile and a mile and a quarter, and you get beat a nose. I'm not discounting that horse at a mile and a quarter by any means.
I agree. I completely agree. On the other side of this, I also want, even though horses like Higher Power and Mongolian Groom have had their moments, it does feel like the Invaders have a real good opportunity here. I'm intrigued also by Seeking the Soul, and I
know
John White got on board, and John got a proposition bet while he was in Vegas on Seeking the Soul. The fact that he has stayed out there on the West Coast, people are going to see those two races at Santa Anita and Del Mar and sort of shrug. He is on a very similar form cycle as he was last year when he ran that big race in the dirt mile. And a lot of people are going to say, oh, he's a Churchill horse. Really? He's a Churchill horse? It's funny. He's won at Saratoga. He's won at Keeneland. He's run well at, I think, Gulfstream, too. I mean, that kind of a moniker is just silly.
Well, I'll give you three words, too, by the way. It's Dallas Stewart. Yeah, if he's his usual 30-1 in the race. But... The thing about seeking the soul is that, you know, you look at these horses' best, third graph numbers. He ran a negative 3.5 when he went to Foster. I mean, that's legitimate. And then the next race you throw out where he had the electrolyte imbalance. So, you know, he gets got a 5, and that's an absolute throwout. Came back and ran a quarter in the last race, which puts him on, a very strong cycle.
You know, it's the same as last year.
Well beaten. That quarter, he's ready to run. He's ready to run another negative number, as he did last year. Like you mentioned, when he ran a negative 3.
It's
so this horse on his best day is going to run a negative 3, negative 3.5. And if he does here, you know, he's got a shot. He's even got a shot to win it if he runs a negative 3, negative 3.5, because that's as fast as these horses are going to run. And that last race, he wasn't going to. You're not going to close. You know, he's trying to make a comeback off that other race, and you don't know what effect it had on him. But he ran an even 4th, and I think considering the fact that he's not going to close the way that race was run, everybody saw it. I mean, McKenzie couldn't catch Mongolian Groom. He's not going to catch anybody running, 6-7 lengths off the pace. So he ran 4th in the race. I totally agree. I definitely, you do not want to leave this horse. Out of the trifectas or superfectas, for sure.
In fact, I mentioned, I referenced. People will see in the wagering strategy. We have $100 that we utilize, and so I've got a fairly mundane 5-horse exacta box for a little bit, and I came back with my reverse tri-key concept, which is putting him third, and then four candidates in first and second, meaning going to be running late, may not be good enough to win, but this is, and we'll discuss this plenty. In fact, maybe I'll get Kenny Kirchner to visit as well between now and next Friday. You know, Kenny's the one who introduced this to me years ago. We were at Churchill, and I asked him, how do you bet Breeders' Cup? And one of the things he said was, he says, I take huge long shots that are late runners that probably can't win, and I reverse try key. And I had never heard the term. And since then, people have really latched onto it. And I always identify, you know, a half a dozen horses in these races that, you know, would be candidates. And if you look through charts of Breeders' Cups, you're going to see a ton of 25, 32-to-1 shots that finish third with late runs, that, you know, that are nice horses that, you know, people just gloss over because you say to yourself, oh, this horse can't win. Right. He might not win. You're right. But
it yeah,
doesn't mean
but,
you can't
I mean,
use him.
If you've been burned by Dallas Stewart before, it's good, big but. I actually would go one step further. I would even make a small
Savers.
Saver bet on him.
Absolutely.
I'm not
absolutely.
Saying to bet him heavy to win.
But, I agree.
But to make a, you know, it's a horse. Look at who he finished second to last year in the Dirt Mile. That's a very good horse. That's a huge.
I don't need any convincing. Believe me, I went through this extensively yesterday. Writing it took me. I didn't get done until 9:30 last night. It took me about 6 hours to finalize. You know what I wanted to do because it was driving me crazy.
I mean, it's just
it's very hard. Well, and I'll mention something else. And I don't know. I haven't heard if Brian Hernandez Jr. is riding Seeking the Soul. I mean, Johnny's certainly not. If Brian Hernandez Jr. is riding, this is the site of the biggest win of his career.
Oh, really?
For Larned.
Oh, yes, of course. You're right. Of course. What am I talking about? Yes.
How about that?
Same race, too.
Mm-hmm. Hey, now.
Yeah.
Yes, we leave no stone unturned.
That's right. Yeah. Listen, that horse that people forget, by the way, that horse ran two monster races in the Classic. He ran great the following year too.
Now that was one of the really fun results, boy. That set off some celebration. I got that wonderful picture that Ann Eberhardt took of me and Tracy Wilkes, I mean, who was shaking.
Oh yeah!
It was unbelievable.
I spoke to both of them after the race, and it was
unbelievable.
I was so happy for them.
Well, the key and the key, they'll tell you the reason Fort Larned won was because I took them to the Dal Ray for dinner leading up. They went to the Dal. That was the key.
I do that all the time, by the way. If we see somebody the night before a race in a restaurant, we always bet that horse. We bet that horse. That's our number. Ed Fontaine used to, you know, because Ed and I used to eat that all the time. And we'd go in there and we'd see. I remember one time we were eating, we had dinner at the Derby. And Derek Meredith walked in, and you know Derek Meredith, you know, and then the next day he wins the Breeders' Cup Sprint, you know, and it was just like it happens like all the time. You talk about Ian and Tracy. I remember when Fort Larned shipped in, and if you remember who was in what famous mare was in Fort Larned's pedigree, I think it was like his great granddam or so, same ownership, Bayakoa,
sure.
And Fort Larned shipped into Ron McAnally's barn.
Oh,
there's a lot of history there, a lot of reminiscing. And so he was at Ron, and McAnally was like, you know, he had won, and you know, because same connections.
Yeah,
you know, he has a great grandson of Bayakoa. And in McAnally's barn, And I said, Roy, I mean, if you want an angle, boy, there's
an angle.
I was there when the horse shipped in. I was at the barn. And I said, man, I mean, there's a lot of history going on here with this horse shipping into Ron McAnally's barn.
I love it. That's a that, there we go. We're stacking up the coincidences. We'll see if we can't latch
yes,
on to some more.
Yes, that's a stupid thing. Shipping into Ron McAnally's barn and seeing somebody at dinner the night before.
Who else in here, Steve? We haven't talked about Code of Honor. We haven't talked about the mayor. Here's a late.
Yeah, I'm thinking Code of Honor is if he's going to be. Hey, look, I love Code of Honor, and again, I love him as a horse. I love him from a personal standpoint because, you know, as I keep saying all the time, because Theo actually fed him breakfast. He ate breakfast out of Theo's hand, you know. I like the horse, and I always root for him. The barn is 100 yards from Avi and Rhoda's house. Every morning I go out and spend the whole morning, every morning, you know, with him. And he's just such a cool horse to be around. That aside, after the Jockey Club Gold Cup, the initial reaction was not
yep.
to come.
Yep.
I remember Shug saying, we'll put him away. We'll point him for races like the Westchester or the Carter or those kind of races. We'll put him away. And I agreed with it. I said, look, the horse has run 3 mile-and-a-quarter races this year. He's a three-year-old. And as I mentioned last week, three-year-olds from the East Coast shipping the Santa Anita for the Classic are 0-for-22. It's a tough thing to ask at the end of a hard year. Horse went through the rigors of the Derby. He runs against older horses in the Gold Cup. He wins the Travers in very, very fast time. And Shug is not the kind of guy that usually would ship to California. I remember he won the Gold Cup with Miner's Mark. And he really didn't, he really didn't want to go out there out to California. You know, but he was Phipps, and I guess they wanted to go, and Phipps was getting old at the time. And he went out there, and the horse finished dead last. So, I mean, it's not something that Shug normally would want to do. So it didn't surprise me at all when he said that they're probably not going to run. Then you start looking at Will Farish. He wins. He has the horse of the year practically basically locked up with Mineshaft. He wins the Gold Cup, doesn't go. I said, they're not going to run this horse. And, I mean, there's no history behind that as far as sending out there. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they're going. Maybe, the only thing I can look at is that Farish changed his mind. He's getting up there, maybe wants to give it another shot. He's got a shot at Horse of the Year. He does have a shot. Listen, the horse wins the Breeders' Cup Classic, the Travers and the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and a second in the Kentucky Derby. This year he's got a shot at Horse of the Year. To me, he's the only horse in the Classic that has a shot at Horse of the Year. Even a horse like McKenzie, if he wins, he's going to be 3-for-7 on the year. I'm just saying that he's got a shot at Horse of the Year. So they changed their mind. That's fine. You want to change your mind? I mean, that's okay. But I agreed with their initial reaction of not going. I would have put him away. I want a 4-year-old for next year, and I think it's tough. Can he win? Of course he can win. To me, he's probably the best 1.25-mile horse in the country, talent wise. But I think there's a lot against him. And then when I heard from all my reliable sources in California that you have to be right up close to the pace, that puts another negative spin on it. So, I mean, all in all, I'm rooting for him. I'd love to see him win. But, as the second choice, if you want to include him in there, but as far as win, I don't know. I mean, I hope he does win. But there's just too much there. I just don't like the fact that their initial reaction was not to run, which I think was the right reaction, and something changed their mind. So we'll see. I watched his last two workouts as usual. His last
Looks
workout
good.
Was sensational.
I thought he looked absolutely. Great. I watched it last night.
So absolutely sensational. I mean, he is so smooth, and he just does it on his own. And the way he galloped out, going into that turn on the gallop out, I mean, he just looked incredible. And his workout before that was excellent as well. So, I mean, he's doing great. So, you know, give him that. You can't throw him out. He's just too good a horse. You know, but I'm not going to go crazy over him as far as betting, because I think there are some negative things. As far as Elate, I definitely think she can be in the money. I don't know if she's fast enough to win. You know, her last three races, I like the fact that she's run three negative Thoroughgriff numbers in a row. They're all negative one and a quarters, which is not quite fast enough to win this. Now, she did have a big number in the past, and, you know, she's run big numbers at a mile and a quarter. It's a question of whether she's fast enough to beat these horses. But I think she's going to make a presence felt, and she's one horse who should be in here. Immediately after the Spinster, I liked her running in this race more, losing the Spinster than if she had won the Spinster. If she had won the Spinster, I'd say, you know, take another shot at Midnight Bisou. I mean, she only beat you in nose the last time. Take another shot at it. But the fact that she got beat, it's like, I have nothing to lose. We're going to try and beat Midnight Bisou, coming off of two losses. I mean, I couldn't beat Blue Prize. I got to beat her again as well. And, you know, and Dunbar Road and some of the others. I said, I might as well take a shot at the Colts. If you're going to go down doing what you do best. And what she does best is a mile and a quarter. She's 3 for 3. She won all three by daylight. So that's her strength. So, you know, use your strength. And I think that was an excellent move. You know, it's funny, I did a column also, you know, you're talking about Yoshida. The similarities, by the way, between him and Drosselmeyer,
mm-hmm,
are amazing. You know, Mike Smith, you know, got beat on Zenyatta, and was devastated after the race. Was in tears, the cost of the race. Comes back the next year on a horse that had won one graded weight race. Granted, it was a Belmont, but he ran one graded race. He was a strict come from behind horse, trained by Bill Mott, owned by Windstar Farm, and he comes back and he wins the Classic at a big price. Last year, he rides McKenzie. You know, he thought he was going to have a huge shot coming off the Pennsylvania Derby, and he's devastated again. The horse runs absolutely nowhere. Now he comes back the following year, and by the way, Drosselmeyer and Yoshida were both pickup mounts. It was the first time he's ever ridden both of them. So now he's got another pickup mount trained by Bill Mott, wearing the Windstar colors. A horse who's won only one graded stakes win on the dirt in his life. I mean, the similarities are amazing to me. So who did he beat with Drosselmeyer?
Game on, dude.
I can just see him now, you know, trying to chase down McKenzie in his race, trying to chase down a Baffert horse this time, and trying to beat Baffert, who took him off of McKenzie. I mean, there's a lot of weird things going on there. But again, I always love parallels in history. And I think that's a really, really interesting parallel between Yoshida and Drosselmeyer.
It's funny because I used two different names talking about McKenzie in the analysis. And I said the question he's got to answer for Baffert, is he, you know, cut from the Bayern Arrogate cloth, or is he a collected
game? That's two different cloths, though. That's way, I mean, you know, cut from the Bayern cloth is one thing. Cut from the Arrogate cloth, that's about an ascension of about 100 cloths from the Bayern was a good horse. But if he's cut from the Arrogate cloth, by the way, then he'd be a lock in here. But I know what you mean. But, you know, Baffert for a while couldn't win the Classic. He wound up winning 3 years in a row. You know, as controversial as the Bayern victory was. But yeah, I mean, that is the big question mark. I'll tell you one thing, by the way. If Baffert does win it with McKenzie, it's going to be very, very emotional. Because I know, you know, I knew Brad. I spoke to him in detail, too. You know, for my book on Baffert, and I know how close he was to that family. He was like another. Baffert's mother always used to call him, you know, the good brother. He was the good one. But you know, they loved him. They loved him like a brother. So, if he wins the Breeders' Cup Classic with a horse named after McKenzie, he's going to get very emotional. Trust me.
Now it's that whole storyline. We right from the origins, the beginning of the career with McKenzie has been. Yeah, has been central. Steve, a couple of other players in here that interesting that three other three-year-olds and War of Will, by the way, has looked very nice. Preparing for
this. I love the way he's been training. I'll say
he
that
looked very much. And then, of course, the other two, three. There's 4 3-year-olds in here out of 11 runners, and Owendale and Math Wizard are the other 3-year-olds. And it is noteworthy that Owendale, arguably, you know, is one of his best performances of the year. He's subsequently won, what, 2 more graded stakes, but his effort in the Preakness, 9.5 furlongs, and that's as far as he's gone, and you know, he looked good doing that. So the four 3-year-olds all have, you know, you look at them, you got a Preakness, a Travers, and a Jockey Club Gold Cup, a Pennsylvania Derby, and Owendale's won, what, Oklahoma, Ohio, and the Lexington. I mean, it's an accomplished group of 3-year-olds.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Owendale, I don't know if he's, you know, good enough to beat these horses, but he's sneaky in here. He's kind of sneaky, and you know, it wouldn't shock me to see him, you know, get a minor piece of it. You know, he's got a good closing kick. That Oklahoma Derby field was a pretty strong field, actually. You know, you think of that.
He was wide every step.
Wide every step of the way. And he beat some really nice horses in there. I mean, it was a pretty strong field. You know, if you look at his numbers, they're steady. He's never run a negative number, but he's run a lot of halves and three quarters, and he's been very steady. And again, if you watch his Preakness, you know, War of Will, he saved all the ground. He had a really good trip in that race. Owendale had to go wide. That's where he likes to run. He likes to run wide, which is why if you look at his last workout, they put him on the inside in company, which I really liked seeing, because you can't guarantee it. You can't guarantee he's going to have a clean outside trip, where, you know, with a clear path all the way, and just make that big run. Good chance he's going to be stuck in traffic in there. And they worked him inside of a workmate, and he had a very, and it was, to me, it was a very solid workout. Didn't flinch at all. Didn't mind being down in there, and, you know, beat his workmate quite handily. So I think that was a very good move, you know, putting him on the inside of horses.
It's a fun classic.
It is. You know, we didn't even get into, you know, Higher Power, who the last race is a total throwout. But, you know, when he won the Pacific Classic, he ran a -2.5, and by far and away the best number he's ever run. You know, my thing with him is that, you know, he's got a past where, you know, he wasn't what's called a classy horse in the past. He just all of a sudden got good. Sometimes you have to look at that with a grain of salt. Did he all of a sudden get that good? A lot of times horses do that. They don't maintain it. You know, they revert back to what they were. Some horses do, some horses don't. I'm not sure with him. We couldn't get a gauge on him last time out because of his stumble and being last going into the first turn. And like I said last week, John Sadler had told Flavian Pratt, you know, just don't abuse him, don't kill him to try and win this race. This is just a prep race. And he didn't. You know, he got up to third. And I know Pratt is still extremely high on him. Now, if he runs back to his Pacific Classic again, he's gonna, you know, he'll be right there. So I mean, you know, it's not an easy race to handicap. I mean, there's, you know, it's hard to throw out a lot of horses. I have a tendency to lean towards the older horses, only because I think the older horses have a big advantage. I think you normally, when you get a 3-year-old winning these races, they're usually, you know, superstars. You know, even going back to the early days, you know, when you saw horses like Damascus and Buck Passer and all these horses that won, they were super horses. You know, when they won the, you know, back then the championship race was the Woodward. So you go back and watch all those races, and you know, all the big horses that won were all you know, Sword Dancer. They were all great horses. So, you know, it takes a really, really good horse, a 3-year-old, to beat older horses. So, I'm rooting for Code of Honor, but, you know, I tend to lean towards the older horses here. So, I mean, the horses that you have in there, you know, McKenzie, Vino Rosso, and Yoshida, whatever order you put them in, you know, I think they're, I think it's a solid group. Now, whether Yoshida can win, I don't know. He hasn't won in 14 months.
Yep.
He's only won the one race. And he's the kind of horse that always, from a visual standpoint, it always looks like, oh, here comes Yoshida, here he comes. But he does have a little bit of hang in him right at the end. You know, he doesn't really sustain that run. He always looks like he's closing. And then when you look at the chart, you said, oh, he only made up a half a length in the last eighth of a mile, or he only made up a length. So, you know, he's not an explosive closer, but he just keeps coming. And
like Drosselmeyer.
I thought he ran, what's that?
Like Drosselmeyer.
Exactly. You know, Drosselmeyer was a Belmont winner. And the thing with this horse is that I think he's going to appreciate the extra eighth of a mile. Now, sometimes you get horses that close at a mile and eighth, and they hang at a mile and a quarter. But, you know, you go back and watch his, people, you know, people forget, by the way, he was beaten, like, what, a length and a quarter in the Classic last year.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, and then his only other mile and a quarter race was the Dubai World Cup. You know, he didn't run badly in it, but, you know, that you can't really use that as a gauge. So, yeah, I can definitely see him, you know, finishing in the money. So, yeah, I mean, your three horses, can't argue with any of them. I think they all look strong.
Well, it should...
But I can't go off of Vino Rosso now. I've been on him too
no,
long. I've been on him since the Derby.
you were out in front. no doubt, and I, you know, I can. It does give John Gunther at least something to root for, because it doesn't look like Without Parole is going to get into the mile on the outside.
I got to stop you right there, and I have to ask you, what the heck happened to that horse? I mean, last year when he won the St. James's Palace Stakes, he was undefeated, a son of Frankel. You know, they were coming off the Gunsters were coming off, you know, with a triple crown with Justify. Tanya was in tears at Royal Ascot, and John said this is the greatest moment, you know, of his career. He looks like a super horse, and then he goes completely off form.
Yep.
If somebody had told you when he won the St. James Palace Stakes that this horse was not going to get into the Breeders' Cup the following year, you'd say, you're crazy. This is a super horse. His son of Frankel is undefeated. And he just totally lost his form, which is so unlike a John Gosden horse. I have absolutely no clue what happened to that horse.
Yeah, it is interesting. And Chad's been working with him, obviously, and he's had a steady string of works, including actually a Turf Bullet going back to the other day. I'm sure they would not have thrown in on this if they weren't happy, if Chad wasn't happy. It feels he's been away since May, the Lock Inge, and where he was dreadful. And, we'll see if he comes back, if they can, you know, come back with a 5-year-old season with him.
I'd love to see him get in here just for that.
Crazy. No, he's not getting in.
No.
He's not, he's on the outside.
Oh, another question I want to ask you before we left. I heard you yesterday talking to Jonathan Thomas about Catholic Boy. Did you read anywhere why they retired that horse? I had to scratch him out. I actually had him ranked like number 6 or 7 for the Classic. I thought the Knickerbocker was a terrific prep. I loved it. He reminded me so much of Valpony on the turf, off the turf. All different distances, back and forth. And then, you know, he had been out since the Suburban. They bring him back in Knickerbocker. He ran a nice, even race. He didn't get beat that badly. It was a good comeback race. And now coming back off the turf to the dirt at a mile and a quarter, I said, this could be a live horse. And I ranked him like number 6 on my Derby thing. And right before I'm about to send it in, I see a thing that says Catholic boy retired. And I read, like, every article on it, and there was, like, one, there was not a single explanation about why they retired him.
Well, it was clear that, and I didn't press, I wasn't going to press Jonathan on the topic.
I was just curious why they never said anything.
Well, this storyline is not dissimilar to Orb's retirement storyline. This is a horse that they've struggled with. Obviously, I mean, Jonathan had him pointed for several assignments, and they kept.
Well, I know he missed it. Yeah, I know. I know. I just figured that maybe they got him back on the right track again. But I heard Jonathan say that you know he was thrilled that they retired him 100% sound. So obviously he's okay. I was just curious that why I'm not. I'm forgetting about you're not going to put Jonathan Thomas on the spot and ask him because, you know, this could be a Claiborne thing and it could be an owner thing and stuff like that, which it probably
sure.
is. So, you know, I'm not going to put him on the spot. But I mean, usually when a horse like that is retired, they give you some kind of quote in the story. But there's not a single quote. No quote at all. Except saying, oh, he's been a terrific horse for us, but... I don't know. I just found it funny because I gave him a shot in the class.
Well,
I got to ask you another question too. By the
yeah.
way, where are all the Euros in the Breeders' Cup turf? I mean, it's Aidan O'Brien and nobody, and not just the turf, but even a lot of the other turf races. I mean, where's the Michaels? John Gosselin's got that one filly. We don't know how good she is. No Michael Stout, no Andre Flop, no Dermot Weld. But just no big names. I mean, it seems to me like 75% of the Europeans are trained by Aidan O'Brien. But
yeah.
For the turf, he's got the three in there. Charlie Appleby's, has got Old Persian, who we already know. You know, we saw him, running in the Northern Dancer. In fact, the other two Euros in there, the other was that German horse, Alenek. Who ran the Canadian Internationals. We've already seen these horses. But, when you come to think of it, you look at the Arc field, it was not a big field at all. A lot of the horses are gone. There weren't a lot of older horses in Europe this year, which is one of the reasons why Enable was able to breeze through at these races and Magic was able to win all these races for, the Irish Champion Stakes. And then when the King, Enable won the King George, and the Eclipse Stakes. I mean, Colton didn't win any of the major races this year. But it's just so strange, looking at the Breeders' Cup turf where the Americans are fairly weak. Yes, the same horses we've seen the last 3 years. But there was just no Europeans to come for the race.
No,
and I still don't know what the what's the latest you heard on Magical? Is she going to come, or is it
this morning? As I've hinted a couple of times, this morning there was I don't want to call it a rumor, but there is some indication. Let's say that that she is very well may not come.
Mm-hmm.
That comes from. That was suggested by a horseman who has got runners potentially in the turf in the two turf races.
I never understand what they were trying to do with her. I mean, they gave her first preference in the turf, but every article I read saying that they're leaning towards the filly and mare. And I said, I don't get it. Why would you?
He does that a lot. He does that a lot. But it didn't matter because knew that.
She should run in the turf. She got a better shot of winning the turf than she does beating Sister Charlie and some of the.
I disagree.
Pretty good fillies.
I disagree.
If Bricks and Mortar, we don't know if he's a mile and a half horse yet. I mean, let's put it this way. Would Enable be in this field? She almost beat Enable last year.
Yep,
she almost beat her this year. She ran a few races against. I know she's a mile and a quarter filly, but off of last year's Breeders' Cup turf and races like the Yorkshire Oaks. I mean, believe me, she can certainly handle a mile and a half.
I'm not questioning that part. I just that she could, but you know, the fact that they're looking at the Fillion Mayor turf, and that they indicated that, you know, at first, right after Saturday, they were indicating she would come. That was the initial reaction. But
seems like stepping down a little bit from the races she's running. I thought they'd run Magical in the turf, and I thought they'd run Anthony Van Dyke in the Classic. This was the kind of year where you would think that they would send somebody for the Classic. And like I mentioned, Anthony Van Dyke's great-granddam is November Snow, who won the Alabama. There's a lot of dirt in that horse's pedigree. Give it a shot. They've won the turf so many times. They really want to win it again. I mean, Anthony Van Dyke is an okay horse. He's not one of your greatest English Derby winners by any means. But I don't know. They've won the turf so many times, and they're trying to win the Classic so badly. I would have thought maybe they'd take a shot with this one. I'm not questioning Aidan O'Brien by any means, but just out of curiosity, trying to figure out what they would do. But Elizabeth, I was going to say, if Magical doesn't come, can you name one European headliner? I mean, a real big name?
Well,
I can't. Circus Maximus.
Circus Maximus.
I mean, he's an okay headliner. Some of the horses they've sent.
How about Fairyland? What about Fairyland?
No, she's not really a headliner. She's good, but I mean, she's not a headliner. I don't know. I just don't think it's a strong European contingent this year.
By the way, you brought up November Snow. Who did she beat to win that Alabama, her biggest win?
who did she beat?
By the dirtiest nose ever.
Yeah, I remember she won by a nose. I can't remember who she beat.
Saratoga Dew.
Oh, wow, really? Well, okay.
Toughest beat of Gary's career.
I remember talking to Gary at the Breeders' Cup that year, you know, and they were expecting big things. She was a hell of a good filly, you know, but she didn't run very well. I think Breeders' Cup was at Gulfstream Park, I think, when she ran.
Yeah, which you would have thought would have suited her, but
yeah, I don't know. For some reason, she just didn't run.
No. Steve?
Yeah. November Snow also won the test. Remember those days where horses used to go in the test in any Alabama?
Exactly. It's very sharp. That was exactly. Throwback style. There's a lot here. A lot here
lot
to deal with.
A lot to digest.
Let me pull you up and get a couple more visits in. We're going to get Rich in. I haven't talked to him in a couple of weeks. And I was supposed to get to Seth Merrow, too. So we'll let you dig into those PPs and the sheets, and we'll talk next week and make some final determinations once these fields are assembled.
It's going to be interesting.
Post-work.
Yeah, we got five races this year that could conceivably produce a horse of the year.
Yeah, exactly, which makes it fun. I heard during that show yesterday while on TVG, they were, you know, the feed, the draw show, and
by the way, they went completely. You said, and you know how many times they made reference that all those horses did not go in the dirt mile because they didn't want to race Omaha Beach. I kept thinking when we were talking about last week, saying that was ludicrous. I don't know if that's why they didn't run it. I don't think they'd be that afraid of. To run in a sprint race. No. Like, that's an easier spot than running.
It's not an easier spot. It's a tougher spot. I mean, it's just the craziest. But it's a crazy suggestion.
You know how many times in TVG they mentioned that yesterday? Oh, you know, Catalina Cruiser is not running because she's afraid of...
sure is, yeah.
All those horses that are going in the sprint. That are
idiotic.
Cross-centered. You know, and listen, that's no bargain going in the sprint against those three monsters.
No, that's just silly. The sprint's going to be unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
I started. What I was going to reference was that Mike Joyce tried to connect the dots regarding the Horse of the Year candidacies. And if so-and-so wins, but this one doesn't win, and they went through this whole hoop jump. It was crazy. It was a Rube Goldberg machine by the time they were done. Crazy.
Steve. We're talking about Omaha Beach, and obviously he's the horse to beat. Watch out for Improbable. His last work reminded me of his works on the Derby Trail. He looked really good in his works, and you're dropping back. After that, he had no shot in Pennsylvania Derby. Could be interesting in here. Watch out for Improbable.
It's a good race. I mean, Nick and I touched on it, and it certainly, you start folding in Mr. Money. Cold Front's going to be ignored here. And then there's the mystery horse, Blue Chipper. And, and I'll tell you, the horse that you, if you haven't seen, Spun to Run.
I was at the track when he won there. I mean, he ran such a game race. He's a nice horse.
Well, Paul Matisse made the suggestion that might have been the best race a three-year-old has run all year. So if you haven't seen that race at Philly, pull it up. It's in a basic canter. I mean, he was never asked. Never. It is an incredibly impressive performance. He's a horse that has got plenty of things ahead of him. And it's funny because it all goes back, Steve, to that press conference at Monmouth before the Haskell, when Juan Carlos Guerrero was Frank Miramati had to tackle him to get him to stop, just going on about how wonderful this horse is, and it's going to be the best horse he ever trained, and the most talent he's ever seen, and he was so effusive. The horse ran a good third in there. And by the way, of course, Maximum Security back on Saturday in the Bold Ruler, which he didn't land in a soft spot for the return.
All I know is how game that horse ran in Smarty Jones. That was the day I was there. I thought he ran such a gutsy race in there, and it's going to be. It'll be interesting to see because he certainly ran well enough in the Pennsylvania Derby. He's right there across the track. Like you said, that last race was
the Mike Bellezzi mile that the sort of appreciation race that they put on.
What did he get, like a 110 buyer or something?
110 buyer.
Wow.
And did it? I'm telling you, it never was asked to run. That's what was so impressive about it. Now he's a very nice horse, and in fact he comes out of a nice New York bred mare. Remember Yawkey Way?
Yeah, sure.
Yawkey Way,
he did run third in the Haskell. People forget about that.
Yeah, I'm telling you. This is a serious horse going, and he's a horse that's still improving, obviously. Steve, you just like McKinsey and his workout, you've run through the wire. At this point, you've run all, at Churchill. You've run all the way to the track kitchen.
Yeah, that's always been my problem. I'm better in the gallop out than I am in the last eighth of a mile.
Steve Haskett, everybody, and we'll get all of Steve's Breeders' Cup selection thoughts next week. Steve, thanks. That was great. Just gonna say goodbye. Steve Haskett, everybody.
I said, take care. See you.
I didn't hear it. All right, we missed it. Steve Haskett, folks. Let's take a break. Probably the last of the morning. I don't know what we're going to do. We're supposed to get Seth Merrow in here and Rich Eng. I don't know. I give up. Back after this.
Play the Empire 6 at Belmont Park.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Play the Empire 6 at Belmont Park featuring daily payouts and a carryover jackpot. Best of all, it only takes 20 cents to take down the Empire. One unique winning ticket earns the entire net pool plus the jackpot carryover. Without a unique ticket, 75% is distributed to winners with 25% added to the jackpot. The Empire 6 consists of the final six races each race day at Belmont Park, and the next jackpot carryover mandatory payout is Sunday, October 27th. Learn more at nyra.com/Empire6. The Empire 6, play small and win big.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Pletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, flood stock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's the matter? Nothing's the matter. That's why I can't leave my house. You must get lonely. No, I don't get lonely. So, that's why I can't leave my house. Well, headed to the city, well, I guess you can't hurt. Nothing's on the television, on the networks. Take me out of here, put the windows down, scream it out, really tune it out. There's something going on, but I don't know where. You're playing with your telephone, you're playing with your hair. The record seems broken, yeah, really don't care. Put the windows down, scream it out, really tune it out.
Do it again. Do it again.
We're back at the races. 25 minutes fill out this morning, and we're trying to find Seth, so maybe no Seth, huh? All right. Rhett Chang is the obvious alternative. I was going to maybe put Rich into tomorrow, seeing as how we've continually gotten stacked up here this week. But that's all right. And of course, next week it's a free for all as well. We leave Saturday. Leave fairly late, actually, 3 o'clock. I don't fly out of Albany until 3, so we'll start in at Santa Anita on Sunday morning. And I brought up the situation, you know, with this racetrack, and Rich has been. You know, Rich follows the Southern California Circuit. He joins us now. Rich Ang, good morning.